Hello, and we are back. We are the Insane Asylum, and we're back after a year-long break. We're here with Dale Kaczmarek, and we've got a little bit of news and updates, and we're going to be back every Friday night at this time. Yep. So how are you, Dale?
I'm doing good. How you guys been?
We've been pretty good. Busy.
Great.
I have been very busy. I finally am no longer in management. I stepped down and I'm back to driving. And I'm happier.
There you go.
Which is going to allow us more time for investigation.
Great, great.
When time starts up again for us.
Yeah, it'd be easier for me to get time off too.
So, what have you been up to this summer? I'm sure you had an interesting summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did a couple of investigations, one that nobody's actually ever been to before. It's called the Wasco train station out near St. Charles, Illinois. And it used to be a train station. There used to be tracks to run right past it. They got some historical pictures inside the building. And one of the... a Reverend Rake, it's just like Rake, R-A-K-E. She actually has a, she does her, she's a Catholic, she's an old Catholic, what they call an old Catholic, a minister, a priest. Because as you know, the regular Catholic Church doesn't allow females to be priests. So she's the old Catholic. And she does her her masses there. And she recently... converted one of my one of my members, Charles Williams, who's my Indiana State coordinator. He decided to go to being a Catholic, so they converted him to Catholicism over there. But there had been some activity there in the past, and the Reverend was sure that it was something going on. So she invited us to come out there. It's basically out in the, almost out in the middle of nowhere. The edge of town is very little as far as contamination or trucks or cars rolling past. And of course, I haven't got a chance to go over the evidence and everything yet, but there was feelings inside that building that several people had while we were there. So that was one thing that we did. The other place we went to was we were not the first to be in there, but it was called the Two Brothers Roundhouse in Aurora, Illinois. And it's just like the name, what it applies to. It's actually a roundhouse where the trains used to go on, and then it would turn the trains to go on another track. So they had that like in the center. And it's a very old building, actually. It dates back to the 1800s. The train tracks are no longer there, but the area where the round house used to be is still there. So we were able to investigate that. We were in the older section of the building at the time, and the place was still open from 7 to 10, but we didn't even hear a peep because the place is just so huge. So we were out off in the old section. We had a dining room, and we had a ballroom downstairs that we could investigate. And almost immediately, we started hearing sounds. I and Mike Rosario, my research assistant, we actually saw shadow play in the corner. There was something going on. We were actually there with WBBM News Talk Radio 78, which is rather big here in Chicago.
Oh.
And she had done a podcast on me about a week or so earlier and talked about, we were talking about ghosts and so forth and Chicago haunts, especially Resurrection Mary. And when we got done with that, she said, well, do you have anything going on that we could tag along with? I said, well, sure, you can tag along with this if you want. So she brought along her photographer and she did the podcast, and then she mixed it with the investigation we did there, which was pretty cool. And she sent that to me a couple of days later as a link. So I actually have that. as a link that and if you want to, I'll share that with you guys so you guys can listen to the link and so forth. It's pretty cool, and she did a really nice job. We shot a lot of video tape there. We had a lot of audio tape going on as well. Pictures, we had infrared pictures, we had full spectrum camera pictures. So we got a ton of stuff to go through to see if there's anything going on there. The owner actually asked me a couple of days later, did you guys get anything? I said, well, I think we probably did. I said, we got some interesting stuff again, come through the Phasma box and through the Obelisk 5. And then we got a new device called the Soul Receiver. It's basically looks like an old portable transistor radio that used to carry around with like a little little handle and so forth. And we've got a lot of interesting stuff that came through there throughout the course of the evening. Again, some were relevant responses to questions we asked, and some were kind of random. But again, some of the random words that came through were, again, relevant to where we were at the time. So while we were upstairs in the dining room, we had cameras going the whole time in the ballroom. So that way we didn't miss anything. So if there was something going on downstairs, we had a REM pod that picks up electromagnetic frequencies, and something gets close enough, the lights go off and on and makes a sound. We had a laser grid down there called a GS2 laser grid and a few other pieces of equipment. And upstairs, we had the massive amount of stuff we had spread all over the place upstairs, too, as well. And it was a great evening. It definitely was something that I wouldn't mind doing again sometime in the future, maybe with a bigger crew.
So sounds like something we'd want to put on our road trip list.
Yeah.
Road trip we're planning for next year.
Sure, yeah.
So, oh, by the way, the other thing I want to mention now that we've got you here is say what I don't remember because I don't have it up right offhand, but you were given some kind of award for 50 years in the paranormal field. What was that all about? Congratulations on that, too, by the way.
Thank you so much. I could actually show you the award here. I got the plaque over here. I was at a conference, Kathy Kressel's Haunted Rockford conference, which I usually speak almost every year, and she gives me a free table and so forth. So I was the keynote speaker, so that meant I was the last person to speak. And before that, Kathy Kressel, Samantha Hutchman, I believe is how she pronounces her name. She's in charge of Tinker Swiss Cottage in Rockford. And also Sarah Bacher, who works with Midwest Paranormal. And all three of them kind of put together this conference. They were like kind of co-sponsors and so forth. And it wasn't my turn to speak yet. So they called me and they said, Dale, can you come up to the stage? I'm going, okay, what's going on? You know, it's got something's going on here. So I didn't even suspect it at all. And they gave me this 2022 Lifetime Achievement Award presented to Dale Kaczmarek in recognition of your achievements, dedication, and contributions to the field of paranormal research. And it's a massive thing. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
Without the glare. I'm trying not to get the glare in there, but.
Yeah, I can see it pretty good. I mean, it's not an ordinary background either. That is something else.
Yeah. So that was 50 years of ghost research, starting way back in, 1973. So, I've had a lifelong interest in the paranormal all my life. Even when I was a child, my grandparents and parents always often told me ghost stories. And that's what kind of started the ball rolling, basically. I think we had mentioned this before on some other shows where you guys talked about me a little bit. That's what started the ball rolling, was just that interest. My mom telling me about Resurrection Mary and how my dad used to drive her around the cemetery in the middle of the night trying to freak her out because the ghost. And I always wanted later on to discover if these were true stories or not. or yeah. urban legends. And that's what started me in the field. And it just ballooned from that point forward. And I've been to, you know, so many places in my lifetime, and been overseas, in England, Scotland, Wales. It's just crazy the amount of places. And next year, we are
Your passport's got to be pretty full there, huh?
Say that again?
I said your passport's got to be pretty full there from all the places you've been.
Yeah. Well, next year we're planning on doing two major trips as well. One is we're going sometime in April or May to California. So we are going to be going to the Queen Mary, the Whaley House in San Diego, Alcatraz.
I'd love to go there.
Golden Gate Bridge. We're going to go to in places in Hollywood, like the famous Hollywood sign, where Peggy Entwistle, who was kind of a despondent actress at the time, wasn't getting the parts she wanted. She stood on the big H and just threw herself into the valley. And there's been reports of an apparition been seen there near that H. So we want to go there. And of course, the Walk of Fame, where you see all the stars of in Hollywood, near Man's Chinese Theater. And there's two very famous, I don't remember their names right offhand, but Nicole Strickland, who was my California state coordinator. There's two cemeteries that a lot of the Hollywood stars are buried into. I saw some of them when I was there in 87. I saw Marilyn Monroe's grave. I saw Heather O'Rourke, who's a little girl from the movie Poltergeist.
Yeah, she was a sad story.
Yeah, they're here. Remember that?
It was a great movie, but.
Yeah, very sad story. And then we're going to go see the George Reeves Superman house where he either committed suicide or was shot, where Bela Lugosi died, where River Phoenix overdosed. So many places, the very famous Menendez murder where they killed their parents, the Sharon Tate home. So we got this thing chocked full. 3 or 4 days out there that we're going to be exploring. And, you know, the highlight obviously is going to be getting into the Queen Mary, which we'll be able to get in there into the first class pool where this little girl named Jackie has been seen and heard. And, you know, I actually have a videotape from this television show Sightings. If you remember that going way back then, when Peter James was in the first class pool and called to her, and in the background, you hear this little girl's voice. It was creepy as all hell. So, you know, I mean, we got this planned out for April or May. And then, you know, in September, we're going to be going to Gettysburg for like 3-4 days when my friend Paul's here. And of course, we're going to Wisconsin with you guys, hopefully to the Beast of Bray Road, the Valley of the Kings, the helicopter crash of
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
And then we got other investigators we're going to be teaming with throughout the time we're going to be there. And they're going to take us to some other locations, too, that have access to, including Dan Norville, who has access to two cemeteries at night that we can go into now. So that's going to be cool.
Now, I thought they closed Alcatraz.
They did for... You know, obviously there's no prisoners there anymore, but they still take people across the bay for tours.
Right, but I thought they stopped that for a while or something because they thought the island was sinking or some shit.
Oh, I didn't hear that, but you could be right. But from what I know, they're still taking tours over there. I don't know if they're doing ghost tours per se, but I mean, yeah, if we go there on a tour, and you know, I'm going to be kind of lagging in the background with my digital recorder running the whole time and, snapping pictures and video, and hopefully we might get something because you never know what, in a place like that, but you had so many people that were killed, were shanked by other people. I mean, even Al Capone was there for a while. I mean, it's going to be creepy. So we got a lot of interesting stuff planned for next year, and that's only just for April and August. I mean, in between, we have a whole bunch of ideas that we're looking at. to do, including the Bell Mansion, which is out in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The Bell Mansion?
I believe it's called the Bell. I may be getting that wrong.
Hmm. And that's in Indiana, you say?
Yeah, it's in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hmm.
And they allow paranormal investigations in there. I always wanted to go back. I've never been there before, but the old Baraboo Inn.
That's up in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Yeah.
But that's a little bit too much for one day. Obviously, I'd have to make that another day or another weekend. But
that's a place that I've been kind of hesitant about going to there. You know, because that's not too far from me. Even closer for him, I think.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. He's not speaking. He's muted. Why is you muted?
Because I was coughing a while ago. Oh. For what one did you say that I'm closer to?
Old Baraboo Inn. Isn't that closer to you?
Yeah.
Than it would be me?
Up in Baraboo. There's some river tracks that run next to it there, kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been kind of hesitant about thinking about that, going to that place.
I know exactly where it's at.
Yeah.
Well, I do too. I've been by there plenty of times.
I mean, I would still like to go up there one year or maybe next year, or if we can squeeze that in somewhere along the line. Because there are some places that are kind of on my wish list. That's one of the places that's not too terribly far away from me. That I'd be able to do in a reasonable amount of time to go up there and to do that. But you know, there are so many other places that, you know, I'm going to check off a lot of my places, you know, next year when I go to California, because Preston Castle.
How to do this here.
It's just so many places that we're going to try to fit in as much as we possibly can. I mean, we might even end up to the Sarah Winchester House. Up there at San Jose. I mean, I was there before, but when I was there, they didn't allow any paranormal investigations or ghost tours. Now they do. So I don't know if we could be able to get in with a small group, or we might be able to join a group that's already started, or maybe we just do a ghost tour. Because I was there, and I kind of know the stories. I know what Sarah Winchester was doing, you know, building on her house. Trying to.
Oh, yeah. That's that house where doors go anywhere. You could end up going down like a 50-foot drop, or stairs that go straight to the ceiling, or rooms that just open to a wall. It was like something. She kept building to keep away the spirits.
Right.
She felt she was cursed because she was the heiress to the Winchester rifle thing and all the killings that were done by Winchester rifles. So she felt she was cursed and she had to keep building or something. I think it was a psychic or somebody told her to do that.
Yes. And what she used to do almost on a nightly basis, and there's actually a room called the Seance Room, which is a very small blue room, almost in the dead center of the house. And she used to go there, or so the story goes, almost every night to commune with the spirits, to figure out what they wanted her to do next. And what it was is, as you say, she was being haunted because of being, you know, the heir to the Winchester Rifle Association. And because of all those people that were killed, it was supposedly the spirit's idea, or, you know, from the great beyond, or what do you want to call it, that she used up a lot of her money to keep building and building and building. Obviously, she didn't go broke. But when she died, the day she died, everything stopped. All the building stopped. It started out with an 8-room farmhouse and ended up being over 160 rooms.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that, and there was a documentary of that, like one of the most haunted places in Wisconsin or in the U.S. And I'm like, God, that just sounds like one of the wackiest type of houses, you know. Yeah. Windows that go nowhere, doors that go nowhere.
Well, there's only, in the state of California, there are two homes that are officially designated as haunted buildings by the state of California. One being the Winchester House in San Jose, and the other being the Thomas Whaley House in San Diego. They actually have plaques as you walk in. They are certified by the state of California to be haunted. And that's saying a lot, because usually, you know, states don't get involved with stuff like that. Park districts, if you go to like Gettysburg or places like that, you know, the rangers are saying, no, there's nothing to these stories. There's no ghost here. But these two homes are, you know, kind of like, you know, sometimes you get, you know, status when you have your house or mansion on the historic registry. Well, this is more than just that. This is registering that they are haunted. And that's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah. See, I don't know. That house is just one of those ones that's like on your list that you got to see to believe it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to go to Alcatraz too. And recently, I guess it was last year, I was reading this article. Or no, 2013. The police department of San Francisco received a shocking message, and it said that the guy claimed to be John Anglin. And he said he escaped from Alcatraz in 62 with his brother Clarence and Frank Morris. And then I couldn't find the rest of the article. This it somehow changed since the first time I looked at it. But apparently it went on to say, well, I'm in bad health and I'm writing this. But, you know, he's like almost on his deathbed now. You know, but that was in 2013.
Well, they never did find the bodies of those three that escaped. So they don't know if they survived or if they lived out their lives somewhere. And that's still a mystery.
You know, from what I understand and from what I've seen and the documentaries I've seen and the stuff I've read, I believe it was possible that they escaped.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and in that article, they also... they also had, you know, where he basically, you know, they had his picture of him now compared to what he looks like then, you know, and they put the side-by-side pictures of, like, the old man. And I was trying to find it in that article, but it must have changed. But anyway,
it was very feasible that they could have survived.
Oh, yeah. It was very feasible.
They had this thing very well planned on how they used raincoats, you know, to basically build this this raft or I guess I wouldn't call it a raft. It's almost like a, what would you call that? Like a rubber boat going down.
Yeah, well, like a makeshift raft, I guess.
A raft. I guess it would call it a raft, yeah. And, you know, that they had... had this all planned out and everything, and they went out when the tide was supposedly going out or something, and you know, I mean, it's very possible that they survived, but if they would have you know, capsized or something, they probably would have died because the water temperature
was like freezing cold. They would have died.
The water temperature was cold enough; it would have basically
hypothermia would have set in within minutes.
And not only that, there's also that bay is filled with sharks.
Yeah.
And the current in that bay is extremely strong.
Yeah.
But so, those three guys were no dummies.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yes, they were dummies. They're the ones that were laying in the bed. Now, the guys themselves, they were on the roof doing their stuff.
I mean, it took quite a bit to plan that and do it just right.
No, they planned it very, very well. What they used, if I remember correctly, what they used were rain jackets.
Yeah.
And they made a glue to glue them shut And they didn't actually, I don't know if it was an actual raft that they made or if they were just, or if they made just kind of a, you know, makeshift float or something, but
right
I know that it was very detailed what they did and how they went through to do
it. Then of course, you know, they made those fake heads, you know.
Yeah, that was my dummy pun.
And the fake grates to cover up, you know, the hole that they made.
Mm-hmm. And what they did is they actually collected their hair from haircuts that they had. And they used the real hair that they pasted on there. So when the guards came by and they did, you know, head checks, he's there. You know, they didn't bother to wake him up or anything. You know, mm-hmm. That was just amazing how they did that with paper mache or whatever they did. It was crazy. I mean, they put a lot of time and effort into this, and you know, maybe they survived. You know, I mean, you know,
I think they did.
It's probably 50-50 or a little bit better than 50-50 that they
I don't know.
Easily survived.
I think they did. I mean, that's just like the D.B. Cooper.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
You know, and that, I believe he got away and spent that money and lived a long life, you know.
Well, supposedly they found some of that money actually in the woods. Yeah,
right. It was washed up on a beach.
Yeah.
Little boy found it.
It wasn't washed up on a beach. Dude, where he jumped out, it was over the mountains.
But they found the thing. It was washed up on like a shoreline of a river.
Where Cooper found, like, jumped out.
Money, and it was tied back to Cooper.
I'm just telling you, where Cooper jumped out of that plane, it was over the mountains, over the forest area.
But if you watch the one documentary, In Search of D.B. Cooper, it's like a two-part deal. They actually talked to the witnesses that found that money. It was like in 1980-something that they found it. And see, speculate that money was deliberately kind of put there by Cooper himself to throw people off his trail.
Yeah.
And they're not exactly sure exactly where he jumped from. You know.
Anybody would strap on a parachute and jump out of a passenger plane, it's got to be a little crazy.
Yeah, but that guy, supposedly, they figured the profiler knew what he was doing because he asked for specific types of chutes. You know, they had a guy reenact the whole thing, jumping from the what is that called? The stairs come down while in flight.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he showed how that could be possible.
Not something I'd like to do, though.
No. I mean, it was bad enough being up in a plane, you know. For the first time, man. And it was too bad because it was not like an ordinary passenger plane. We were cramped. You know, I was very cramped. You know, it was one of those like special flights, direct flights from, or was it Marshall? No, not Marshall. Mitchell Field Airport in Milwaukee, straight to Vegas. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those like express flights. And so the seating, very cramped.
Yeah. I get all the time. I'm getting little, you know, things in the mail from casinos. I mean, go to Midway Airport. We will fly you and your guest on this MD-80 jet to Vegas or Lake Tahoe or Reno, and it's free. We'll put you up in a hotel. Gambling money. We'll give you a food allowance. All they ask you to do is gamble when you get there. So, I mean, I could go on trips all over, you know, the western part of the United States if I wanted to just jump on a plane.
Yeah, I never caught that gambling fever. You know, I play it online for free, and those slot machines hate me as it is, so I don't even bother. I go in, I make a spending limit, and I'm out, whether I win or lose. You know, I've been to the local ones here, like in the Dells and in Madison. Yeah.
Since tomorrow is actually Veterans Day, and I'm actually an Army veteran, and we're going to the Harrah's Casino for Veterans Day, and we're getting $140 of free gambling money. We're getting a free steak for me and my wife, a home big dinner. We're getting extra points for you know, to add on to your total amount of points, and it's going to be a nice day. I mean, there's going to be a lot of, you know, I'll assume there'll be a lot of veterans there as well, but it's something that they offered me because I'm a Army vet.
I mean, cash me in now.
Well, you know what they used to do, you know, a long time ago is when they used to offer the money, you know, the free money, they would offer, you know, they would offer it in cash to you, or they'd offer it to, you know, money that, you know, it's like, you know, their $20 bill, which is a Harrah's $20 bill, and used to be able to put it in the machine and cash it out and then go home. And Harrah said, well, heck with that now. I mean, we got to the point now, which the money is on the machine. So yeah. you put your card in there, and your password, and then you select how much money, and it takes it out of their whatever they call it, whether storing how much money you have. So we got $140. So if you go like 10, then you got 130. You go 10 more, you got 120 until it's all gone. And you can't cash any of that out. You can't just say, okay, I want $50, cash it out and go home. The machine will not let you do it. They want you to gamble the money there. So, But anyway, I like it. I mean, like I said, last year I hit my biggest jackpot of all time when I hit $10,000.
Nice.
And I never thought in a million years that I would get that. You know,
The only way I'd ever win big is if I got into a Texas Hold'em tournament.
Yeah.
Because then the odds are in my favor.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
What's that?
You just think you could beat me.
I know I can beat you because I have.
You talking about blackjack?
No, Texas Hold'em.
Texas Hold'em.
Oh, I don't even know how to play that game.
I grew up in a poker playing family, and family reunions, we'd have poker, all the picnic tables in the shelter, everybody was playing poker at it. You know, nickel, dime, quarter, just little bitty stuff. But I'd walk away from those, like, you know, $40, $50 richer.
Right, yeah. Well, it's like you say, when you go to a casino and you play any of those table games, whether it's roulette or blackjack or Texas Hold'em or whatever, I mean, you already only win as much as you gamble. I mean, so if you gamble like $50 and you hit like, say, $50, you win $50 more. Or if you, like, if you're playing craps and you go with, you know, there's only a couple of ones that you can only be played like one way, like boxcars or like 11 or like snake eyes, and they have higher odds. So if you were to bet, say, $100 and you get 35-1, hey, that's $3,500.
Yeah.
I mean, the chances of you getting it is not good.
No.
Yeah.
The odds are against you.
I've always said, where else can you go in a casino and pluck in $1 and win $10,000? Nowhere else but a slot machine. You cannot win $10,000 on any board game by placing a dollar bet.
But a lot of that's got to do with luck, too, I swear to God, because I've never won on any of them slot machines, but I've gone there with somebody, and they stick some money in there, like a $20 bill, and next thing you know, they're cashing out $3,500.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, Jesus Christ.
I have.
Yeah, fuck you. We don't talk about you.
When my parents were still alive and they'd come out for visits, my mom always looked forward to going to Ho-Chunk. One year when they came out, this is when Gina and I were still married, we went up to Ho-Chunk. And I split off from the group and let Mom and Dad and Gina go play the damn slots. I took and went over to the blackjack table, sat down, took and cashed the 20, got my chips. Within about an hour and a half, I was up. What was it? It was up around $300. And then Dad came over and started talking to me. And that's all it took.
You lost broke my concentration. And you lost
it. No, I didn't. Broke my concentration. I started losing. I'm like, all right, I'm cashing out.
So I took
all my chips.
Hey, Mikey. What's going on?
I found the other two. And I sat down at the machine next to Gina, and I popped a $5 ticket in there, and I hit the damn thing on the second spin for over $50, and then turned around two more spins later and hit it for over $100.
Oh.
She got mad at me.
I don't have that kind of luck.
Yeah, Gina got mad at me because I was the one that won and she didn't.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, I've investigated a lot of haunted spots, as you know. I've been with you guys for, you know, a number of years and so forth. But there's always one place that's consistently haunted, and those are casinos.
Really?
Because they make your money disappear.
Yep.
Good one. Yeah,
money.
I go there just for the fun. I never expect to win because those machines hate me. And most of the time, our local ones don't have Texas Hold'em. You can't play that and hit Ho-Chunk or
Ho-Chunk up in the Dells, the Ho-Chunk Casino, the main one, has a card room.
Does it?
Yep.
The
craps. They got the poker, the craps. They have blackjack. They also have, I think they have roulette there.
Well, what about the Potawatomi Casino? That's actually even better.
Potawatomi is in Milwaukee, and that one's actually a good size one too.
I've never been there.
Yeah, I've been to both, and I think the Potawatomi was the one I got lost. I couldn't figure out how to get out of the damn place. I had to flag down, you know, somebody, some security. How do I get out of here?
It's by design.
It's so big.
Keep you trapped in there and keep playing the slot machine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. That's the thing, Dale. It's by design.
It is.
And do you know that you'll never see windows in the casino? If it's daylight or nighttime, you'll never see a clock in the casino because they don't want you to know how long you've been there. So they got these, and there's even some thought that, and I don't know if it's true or not, this is what I've heard, it may be an urban legend, that they pump in pure oxygen to relax you so that you gamble more. You've heard that, right,
yes,
Mark?
Yes, they do. I can literally take you to the facility, the building that they have connected to the casino up in the Dells, and show you the exact room and everything that they have that the oxygen tanks and stuff in.
Because I know when I come out of these casinos, even if it's Harrah's and Joliet, you know, my nose feels different. Like, you know, I've been breathing in a different type of air, and all of a sudden I'm back out to the old polluted air outside, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, there's all these different ways that they want to.
Everything's calculated in a casino.
Yeah.
To make you gamble further.
When you're fed pure oxygen or 90% oxygen like that, it's not to relax you. It's to keep you alert and keep you awake.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is it's keeping you awake so you play more.
That's right.
So you plug more money into those machines.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I started going to these casinos, they used to close up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and they'd reopen like 6 or 7. So it was like 23 hours of the day. Now, most casinos are 24/7. They yeah. want you in there the whole time, day after day after day after day, until you spend all your money.
I always thought they were always were 24/7. They've been that way.
Not here. Harris and Joliet. I used to go there, and they would make an announcement. Like quarter two, like 4:45, 15 minutes. You start cashing out and going to the cage, and then they'd start walking around, with a security guard. Cash out, come on, cash out. They'd force you to cash out. And of course, as soon as you walked away, you play for another 5 minutes. They come around again, cash out now.
Yeah, they give you warnings.
Yeah.
But I've never seen that. Ho-Chunk, as far as I know, has always been 24 hours.
Yeah.
And when the one in Madison opened, that was always 24 hours.
Yeah. You know? I think part of the reason was, too, because they wanted time to clean the place. Clean it, get it nice and snazzy for the next day and so forth. And on top of that, too, when you would get money, okay, say if I walked in there on a Saturday and I got $140, okay, the very next day you would get more money because it's the next day. But because they made a break, you couldn't stay after the break and come back and say, oh, I'm going to use that money, because you couldn't use it. That was another thing they did too. So,
yeah, I don't know what it is. The one in Madison kind of pissed me off. It's like back in the day, there was like plenty of things for kids to do. Back in the day, Madison had something called Wild Waters. It was a water park. They tore that down and built the casino there. So now there's nothing left for kids to do anymore.
Well, look what they did in Chicago here recently. They took the old Medina Temple and they built a Bally's Casino in the old Medina Temple. And
what was the temple?
It was the Shriners. It was the Medina Temple.
Okay.
It was a kind of an abandoned building, more or less. It was just kind of closed up. Nobody was using it. So here comes Bally. They made it a casino. And they wanted to start this casino while they were building their permanent building someplace else. Now they're saying they may stay there, but they've already said from the first month that they were there to the next month, they've already started to lose money. Because number one, you go to city of Chicago to that Valley Medina Temple, there's no free parking. You got to pay for parking in the city of Chicago.
Jesus Christ.
So you got to pay for the parking, which is atrocious. If you've ever been to the city of Chicago, you know how expensive that is.
I don't like coming to Chicago.
You're losing money in the casino, and you're losing money for your parking outside too. So, I mean, they have the Rivers Casino, which was sort of on the west end of Chicago, but they got a parking lot, just like, all the other casinos, like, the Harrah's, I can't remember all their names, but all the other ones, they usually have parking lots. This one, the Bally's, there's no parking. You can park on the street. You got to feed the meter. Yeah.
Nope, not me.
So
I wouldn't go to Chicago anyways.
Me neither.
Not for a casino. I mean, for things like Resurrection Mary, yeah. Joliet Prison, yeah. Things like that, they're on my list.
Well, I wouldn't even go to downtown Chicago. You wouldn't catch me anywhere in Chicago with all the shootings going on and everything now.
Well, that too. That plus all the one-way streets, they're usually going the wrong direction, the opposite direction I want to go. I hate driving down there. I really do.
Yeah.
Man, I refused. After I stopped driving cab, I refused to ever drive in Chicago again.
Chicago's a pain in the ass.
See, another thing we're planning on doing, like kind of next year, kind of to switch gears here for a second, is that we're hoping to go, well, not hoping, we're actually going to go to Indiana to do some research and some investigations out there. There's a very famous spook light out there. You guys probably heard of it, called the Moody Light.
No, I just started investigating some stuff because our trip that's going to take us from Illinois, Indiana, to Indiana up into Michigan.
Okay. Well, this is like near Rensselaer, Indiana, which is probably about, I'd say, 90 minutes south of where I'm at. And this spook light is very famous in Indiana. It's probably the most famous spook light out there. The story goes very quickly. Is that supposedly there was there's several different versions of this, but the most commonly retold version is that there was a farm out there, Farmer Moody, who owned the farm, and that Indians had came in there and either attacked and actually had kidnapped his daughters, and so Farmer Moody was seen along his farm holding a lantern, looking for his daughters. And the lantern light that Farmer Moody has is supposedly the Moody light that people see to this very day, that Farmer Moody is still out there looking for his girls that they would never return. But I've been out there several times, and I can tell you for 100% that is not a paranormal phenomenon. It is definitely car headlights. We've proved that 100%. So we were going to go back there to actually shoot a video segment out there. So we would set up where people normally view the light from, and then we would have part of our team with a high-powered spotlight go on the other side of this big, giant field and shine the light in our direction. So what happens is when you're standing over here and you're seeing the light, what happens is the light comes towards you, and then there's a road that turns. So suddenly the light just disappears. And people, wow, where'd that light go? Well, it's a car headlight that just made a turn. Now you're not seeing the car headlights anymore. So we want to do that. And there's also a place down in Terre Haute, Indiana. There's a mill out there. I don't remember the name right offhand, but it's supposed to be haunted. I know one of my friends out there had been out there, Stephen Miller. I don't know if he's watching.
I like mills. I mean, a lot of deaths and stuff can occur in mills to make that paranormal stuff, especially if they're old. The older they are, the more accidents probably happen.
And the running water connection. You have the running
water. Right, right. Because the one we were at, it would have had one too, because it was right alongside the Milwaukee River.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing some investigating, you know, down in that area when in August, when my friend comes from England. I'll be doing something with him every single day. So I got a lot of planning.
How long is he going to be around?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. Oh, yeah. All those 3 weeks. And yeah. So he said this is the mill right here, your friend, yeah. Mikey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the one I had actually planned to go see last year, the year before, 2022, but we just simply ran out of time. I had planned too many things for that day, and we were at least 90 minutes or almost 2 hours away from home, my home, so I had to come back because he was staying at my house. When we hope to get down there, and just specifically, you know, see the couple of locations that we want to do down there and anything else that comes, you know, come to my attention, and just kind of focus on those. And then I think what we will do is we'll cross over into Illinois and go west. And there's a couple of bridges that I've investigated in the past. One of them is called Airtight Bridge, very famous haunted bridge. And we got some crazy stuff. When I was there years ago, and Mikey was with us, actually, we were down there with another paranormal group, and the bridge is not very long. I mean, literally, it's maybe, 30 feet, 40 feet tops, and it spans over a little river, so you got the running water connection. And we were looking over the bridge. We had our equipment on one side, and then on the other side, you know, is the area we were looking at. Now, obviously, you can see a car coming for miles away. So if we have stuff on the bridge, you got to move the stuff, let the car go past. But it was very little traffic, actually, when we were there. So we were looking across the bridge, and the girlfriend of the leader of the other investigative team that was there saw the same thing that I saw at the same instance. I saw a white figure move from left to right across the bridge and disappear. And I go, whoa, what was that? Now, of course, you know, our cameras didn't reach that far. I've solved that problem. I have technology now that illuminates a distance of a football field, 300 feet, 100 yards. And all the people that I was with basically, and I actually felt safe because they were all concealed carry. Now, we were in a very rural area, well away from any, you know, houses, and I don't even think we were getting cell signals out there. So I was happy that somebody was carrying a gun just in case somebody tried something out there. But, you know, we went across the bridge immediately. They ran across the bridge, and they thought it was somebody messing with us. That's what we thought initially. So we went across there. We didn't see anything. And I did have a pair of Russian-made Generation 1, which is very low grade, infrared goggles. And I put them on, but it was already after the fact, and I'm scanning the area, making sure nothing pops up. Now I have the technology, like I say, to illuminate 300 feet away and also take pictures and video. So when we investigate the Beast of Bray Road, I will have that technology there. So if something pops up at that cornfield, like I thought I saw, well, I know I saw, and I videoed. Yeah,
we both saw it.
With that flare camera, which I still can't find that damn footage. You know, it's not likely to lose something. So it's very possible I put it in the wrong folder, and I'm going to have to search a few hundred folders to see.
I hate it when that happens.
But remember I showed that footage to you guys when we were there in. And it did look like there was something there. And I shined, we had this big spotlight. Remember we shined the spotlight over there? We didn't see anything, but it was still showing up on the flare. And I go, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and while Mark was out there, he heard something. He thought something was following him in the cornfield.
Right. And wasn't there, as we were walking, we all walked down that trail too, past that cornfield. Wasn't there a part, a section that we kind of got a cold blast? It was like a cold air. I remember feeling that. I don't know if you guys felt it or not, but it was like about halfway before the cornfield ended, because there was some area that Lee had showed us, and I don't remember exactly what it
was. That was down by the marsh area.
And we were going down there, and I felt something. I felt like a cold breeze. It wasn't cold that night. It was pleasant out there when we were out there. I don't remember what time of the year we were out there, but
it's in August.
August, yeah. So it would have been nice out and everything. And I can't wait to go back out there because I got a lot of new technology that I'm going to have two different devices by then that I'm purchasing right now. One is a motion sensor. Now, most motion sensors work on the principle of passive infrared. In other words, they send out an infrared beam that we can't see from point A to point B. So there's a sender and a receiver. Usually that's how it works. Something breaks the beam, it goes off. Well, this does not work with passive infrared. It works on radar technology.
Oh,
radar technology. It's called Dr. D motion sensor. You can find that on a few sites. In fact, I can send you a link if you guys just want to look. What's that? I'm not sure what he means by that. Okay.
The bridge.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. Yeah, that's probably, yeah. Okay, the bridge, yeah. So that's one thing, and that's only like $60 for that device, and it's going to be better than, I might even get two of them at that price, because the guy's offering me, he's offering me the stuff at cost with free shipping. So I can't get any better than that. Now, the other thing I would like to get, and I already have one. I have a X camera, the structured light sensor, that SLS camera that puts out a mapped area. And if something shows up, it looks like a stick figure.
Right, right.
Mine doesn't quite work really well. I got to send it back to Bill Chappell, and I'm sure he'll fix it for me. But I don't know if you ever guys have been watching Ghost Adventures recently. I only watch it because I like to see what kind of equipment they use and where they're going. Everything else is BS. But they use a different SLS camera. Mine, the one Digital Dowsing makes, it basically, all you see is black and white. So you really can't see like the corners of the room, the door, until you get on top of it. The one that they use, it actually has different colors, like maybe half the screen or a third of the screen might be blue and then red. So you can actually see where you're going, and you can actually see the parameters of the room. If it's the same one that my friend Dave Giuliano was offering on his site, the Ghost Hunting Store, he's going to offer it to me for about $430, which is at cost, basically free shipping. If that's the same one, I'm going to jump on that, because I think that'll be it's going to be a little bit better one, only because you can see where you're shooting at. And if we're using it in conjunction, say, with East of Bray Road, you're going to be illuminating the edge of the cornfield. So if then something then pops out, it's going to show up like a stick figure.
Yeah.
And as you know, the beast usually is seen walking like we do on two legs.
Right. Well, what we saw that night was a bipedal figure in that cornfield when you caught it on your, I mean, the way you had your thermal camera set up, I mean, it was big enough screen for both of us to look at. So yeah. I obviously, you know, I'm sitting there looking at it like you are, and it's like we lost track of it. And that's when, you know, Mark Sinks was saying he was being followed by something in the cornfield. I mean, that whole night was kind of strange. I mean, and the way the fog rolled in so thick and so fast.
That was crazy.
And then dissipated just as quick as it came in. It was gone. You know, that whole night was pretty weird.
That whole area with equipment. I would, like I said, I'm going to buy, probably going to buy two of these radar technology motion sensors. And I would put one literally facing right where we saw it last time. And
well, I want to take a bit of old-fashioned technology out there. You know, I want to take and this is got to be some daylight for this, but I want to take a compass, an old-fashioned compass, and just walk the property with it and see if that thing just, you know,
breaks
out or not in any area of that property. Myself, I'm looking into getting a couple of pieces of equipment between now and August so that I, you know, when we go back to Bray Road, I want to try something new things myself. But that night, it demands another investigation.
Absolutely.
Night.
Yeah. I hope to be able to get there, like you say. Before, I mean, we're going to be out there in August, so the sun will be going down that early. So it'll probably be, you know, 8-ish, maybe 8:15, something like that, maybe. I mean, I would like to do the same thing. You know, walk, you know, you can use a compass. I can use some of our, you know, Melmeters or something like that to see if there's any electromagnetic fields or something like that. To see if that, and then if we do get a hit, or if the compass starts going crazy, that would be an area we would definitely want to focus on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, and we're also, if Mark ever gets a hold of these people, we got a couple of people that are going to be possibly joining our team between now and then.
Okay. I finally got a hold of Kayla today, so she's supposed to send word over and let them know that I want to talk to them.
Good, good.
Yeah, we actually got two new members in our group, actually. One actually works or is part of the Theosophical Society in Wheaton. And she hasn't done much investigating. She was over at Missouri State Prison to do an investigation out there, but she's very interested in doing stuff. And I'm just waiting for her to send the rest of the files back to me so I can set up like a kind of a, what I like to do is like to do a kind of Zoom interview with all people before they join, just to kind of get an idea of where they're coming from or what their expectations are for a group like this.
That's what I wanted to do with these people when he gets a chance. So
because what people see on TV and what we do is really two different things.
Right. I mean, we're not in it for the fame and the fortune. We're in it to find the answers.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and do the research, the hard work, you know. I mean, they're in it for the money, the fame, the fortune, everything's edited. I mean, come on, let's be truthful here. They only show you the good stuff. How many times did they go to that place and find nothing?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, somebody, I don't know who it was, somebody said it best when they were a guest on our show once that, you know, half the time when you're like investigating a cemetery, you're just sitting there talking to yourself for hours. You may never find nothing the first time or the second time, you know.
Well, I like to call it, you know, some of those shows and some of their evidence, selective editing.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good word for it.
What they might do is they might pick up, say, a name or a response, and then they go back and they ask the question and then insert that selective editing, and all of a sudden it answers the question.
Right, right. Not like what really happens sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure that happens a lot. I mean, there have been places that we've went to that we've got absolutely zilch. And that's the way it should be. I mean, if you go out every single time and you're getting something, the people are going to start, hey, what's going on here? This guy gets something every time he goes out.
There's places that you go to that have all kinds of activity, you know, and I'd never been there. It was the first time, you know, thanks to you, we went to Farrar School.
Yeah.
And we got all that activity in the boiler room.
Yeah. Screw you.
And I'm glad you guys experienced that then too. Because I know I had experienced that the first time I went there. I was wondering if that stuff was still there.
That whole thing also proved that, you know, you got to be prepared and on your toes from the get-go, the minute you enter some of these locations, because we all saw it, we've talked about it numerous times, but nobody got it on camera.
Yeah.
The ball that was moving across the gym floor when he was down there, that was behind Dale when he was down there doing his little documentary piece on the place.
Yeah.
You know, we were all up above and we all saw it. And it's like, did you see that? You know, and nobody caught it on camera because we were all just taking out and unpacking equipment up there.
Right. And that's why, you know, I like to, and I've learned my lesson in all the different investigations I've done in the past, is that when we go to a location, the first thing that should be set up immediately is cameras. You got to get the cameras in a spot. You need to get it rolling. And then, you know, you can be setting up as you're rolling, because so many times we have been in locations where things have happened. Place in Indiana, it was a what's the name of the something county jail, Morgan County Jail in Indiana, and this was a very small little prison. You know, it had maybe four or five cells, and you know all the doors were open. And they have, you know, when you kind of like when there's a spot where people, the jailer can put the food through. And it's like, right. it'll sit there. So there's like a little ledge.
Right.
And we had put the tri-field natural EM meter. That thing hardly ever goes off. No, hardly anybody uses that in these TV shows because it never goes off. So if it does go off, then you got to scratch your head and figure out what's going on. We put that on there, and that thing, that needle is being buried by whatever was there. And I'm going, holy cow, get the cameras. By the time I got the camera set up, then things stopped.
Yep.
And it didn't work the rest of the night as far as getting high readings like that. So the first thing we do because of that investigation is those cameras get set up first.
Yeah. There was another house I heard about that I want to check out that's in Indiana. What was it called? Willow's Weep. You ever hear of that house?
Yes, I have. I'm under the impression that it doesn't allow investigations anymore. I mean, I talked to somebody about that, and I'm trying to remember who it was. Maybe it was Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller, who told me about that Marco Mill, and I asked him about this place because it wasn't too far from this mill. So I said, well, maybe we can do both. And he said they don't do any more investigating anymore.
I don't know.
That the place is closed.
Well, I don't know.
So unless they reopened it.
I do know who owns the house now.
Yeah.
After watching the documentary not too long ago on that house, he was a guest on our show.
Okay.
And I contacted him. As far as I know, he still owns the house, so it might be worth talking to him more and seeing what's really up with that.
Yeah. Well, if you got the name or something or that I can contact.
His name's Dave Spinks.
I remember that. Now I remember seeing it on your show, Dave Spinks.
Yep.
Like almost like Mike Sphinx.
Yep. I watched a show. I think it was that one with William Shatner, The Unexplained.
Yeah.
William Shatner. And they were talking about that particular house. And during the footage they were showing, it was like Dave Spinks and his partner were there investigating it and talking to the current owner of the house. And before it was all over with, he offered to buy it from her and she sold it to him.
Okay.
So I contacted him because I was planning this trip out in my head. And, you know, when I got my eyesight back, which I did Wednesday,
great.
You know, it'll be back even more in December after December surgery. But I want to kind of make plans and not fly by the seat of my pants when I go through. So,
right.
But since you got probably a lot more clout than we do in the paranormal world, you might be able to get somewheres with the dude.
Well, that was another place too that we did several years ago. I'm trying to remember it actually at one time was, I believe, a Masonic lodge. And it then turned into kind of like a antique store. And it's on my website. I just cannot remember. I'd have to go through all these, flip through it here. But when we were there, we were in the upstairs. Now the upstairs area is where the lodge used to be, where they used to have their meetings and so forth. And this was Masons that were there. And we were using the Ovilus. At that time it was the Ovilus X, which is still one of my favorites, by the way. And I was there with another person from another group who is a high-level Mason. And, was he actually there? No, he wasn't actually there. I'm mixing it up. But anyway, we were upstairs, and we were using it in dictionary mode. Now, dictionary mode, as you know, words will come through from the dictionary. There's 4,000-some-odd words. And all of a sudden, all these Masonic words start coming through. Acacia, I can't remember all the words, but they all started coming through, and like almost like one after another. And I'm going, wow. I mean, for all those to be related to Masons in a place that was a Masonic lodge was crazy. Now, we were trying to get back in the place. I understand we were there. The owner has died, and they were trying to figure out what to do with the building or who owned the building at this point. And I actually talked to somebody who at that point was still trying to figure out what they're going to do with the building. I said, well, let me give you my email, and if you guys open the place up, you know, we would love to come back and do an investigation, even if we have to pay something for it. Because it was really, really a neat place. And it's in Illinois, so like maybe a couple hours or south of where I'm at, southwest. And it was just crazy what we were getting. And we weren't even asking questions. It was like one after another, all these words start coming out. And oracle and all kind of strange words like that coming through. Now, these are all in the dictionary, but to have all those words come out, and that's not the
first associated to the same building you're in. Yeah, that's not just coincidence. That's right. Something strange.
It's actually not that one. I know which one you're talking about, Mikey. It's not that one. I never actually investigated that Edward Dobbins Lodge. It's actually on my website, and I'd have to go through all these different things.
You know, I never believed in some of that stuff actually working until we were at that school and we were in that boiler room and that all those angry voices were coming through.
Yeah.
You know, and then what happened to Mark? I still don't let him live that down.
Hey, by the way, Joe, I need to step away. I got to go use the bathroom.
Okay, well, make sure you come back because I got something important to talk to you about after we're off the air.
All right, I'm just going to remove myself from there and you guys talk.
Well, don't forget to come back. So.
Yeah, this place, going through here, trying to find it real fast here. It actually had on the cornerstone of this building, what it actually was, and it did say something about it being a lodge. So there was no mistaking the fact that it was at one time a Masonic lodge.
Yeah, those places, I tell you, sometimes you don't even know the place was like a meeting place for them. We investigated a bar. Okay, what was that bar called?
Where?
Here in town.
The Irish Pub.
No, that line. It was the Lions.
Lions Pub.
The Lions
Pub. Irish Pub.
Yeah, it was an Irish pub called the Lions Pub. Anywhere, it had three floors to it. One floor, the first floor was obviously the street, street level. So they come in, there's the bar. Then up on the second floor was the ballroom. They were
No. Second floor was where they were trying to make it into a restaurant. The third floor was the ballroom where the Masonic Lodge was.
Yeah, the Masonic Lodge was on the third floor. And they had their logo. You could see the logo. It was like painted into the floor.
Okay.
And you can see, and their logo was on the wall still up there. These two floors were like they were remodeling it. The second floor was being worked on. But the strangest thing that happened when we were in there, we were on the second floor. I was. Tanya and Mark were on the third floor, and I was down there with just a camera. So I had just a camera, and I was staying in a stationary spot with the camera kind of like going across like this, so that I could see the whole room, right? And as I was standing there, I swear to God, and it got on the camera's audio too. It was like Morse code.
Huh.
Tapping on like that aluminum vent type, the ventilation system, you know. Because you could see it. It was all, the wall was totally exposed. And so all that metal was exposed for the heater and the air conditioning units to, you know. But it was like somebody was tapping Morse code.
It's crazy. Right?
And nobody was on those floors except the three of us. And those two were upstairs. So it was like totally, and they didn't hear it. I did. But we played it back, and it's like, yeah, that's Morse code. And it's like, too bad I don't know Morse code anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. I never.
You know, it's kind of a lost thing after you get out of the scouts or something. You know?
All I know is SOS.
Yeah, I think that's the most common one that everybody should know.
Isn't that the place where we saw that picture?
Yeah, that's also where we also saw the picture, and it had a picture,
a ghost dog in it.
It had a picture. The Mark took a photograph of it with his phone so that we could zoom in on it. But the picture was of the building and the street corner that it sat on
in the 1800s.
The road was still gravel, you know, and you know, no street lights really, but the corner was there, and you could see this dog, but not really. And it was like a double image. There was like two dogs there when you blowed it up and looked at it. One was like a ghost image.
Wow.
But then they also had people that took pictures with ghosts in them.
Yeah. So
they had ghosts in them later.
So I don't know what the history of that corner is exactly, but there's something there. That's right here in the town I live in, Watertown.
Okay.
The bar sits here in Watertown.
Now, I stand corrected, Mikey. We actually did investigate the Edward Dobbins Lodge. I was thinking about another lodge run by another paranormal team, which I think we might have been in, but we never investigated, or maybe never were in there. Another thing is kind of interesting too, that was actually on the news and also on Facebook, is that Bobby Mackey's Music World is going to be torn down.
Really?
Yeah, they are tearing down the building, and I don't know if Bobby Mackey is going to relocate someplace else. They weren't specific on that. So that place that was very, very haunted, you know, it wasn't when we were there. I mean, we did get a couple of strange things that happened.
But they say it's one of like the most haunted places in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were investigating the area where Carl, who was at one time an employee, that apparently got possessed by something there. And we were in the area where allegedly, this is what I say allegedly because I'm not 100% sure, but allegedly where this exorcism or cleansing, they were trying to get supposedly the demon out of him. And we kind of asked a question. I don't know exactly what it was. I think it might have been, you know, why were you possessing Carl or something to that effect? You're using a ghost box, and it clearly came through. It says, "That prick Carl." You know.
Oh, jeez.
And later on, we went up to the apartment where Carl had stayed when he was an employee there, because he actually stayed there. So he was close to the place where he, you know, could clean up and so forth. And we had a very clear voice that came through that said a first and last name. It said George Nettles. And we tried to do research on that to see if it was any connection to the building. I talked to the people that run the tours there, you know, were there that night with us, and also talked to Doug Hensley, who wrote a book about Bobby Mackey. It's called Hell's Gate.
Yeah. And,
he didn't know anybody named George Nettles. So I'm assuming it was something before it was Bobby Mackey's. Maybe the property belonged to George Nettles before, you know, the building was built down there or something. You know, sometimes when you get these responses, they're almost like they're like overlays. They're like one on top of another. So right. Talking to, you know, something or a spirit, you don't know if that spirit belongs to the current incarnation of the building, a previous incarnation, before that or before that. You don't know.
Or if it's associated with the land, not the building.
Exactly. And that's why I tell people, too, I say, you know, I mean, when you say a haunted house, sure, the house may be haunted because it's on the haunted property, because something may have happened there in the time. Maybe there was an Indian skirmish. Maybe there was
It was built on a cemetery.
Yeah, built on a cemetery or part of a Civil War skirmish, and people died on that property. It takes a lot of research and investigating into the genealogy and also to the history of a place to determine when it started this whole ghost story.
Well, look at the I mean we didn't get nothing when we were there, but this goes back to Baraboo, okay, again. Okay. And I got a call from my cousin, and she lived in a house up there in Baraboo and so on and so forth. We didn't really have anything happen while we were there. I mean, we had some interesting kind of like artifacts that we found in our attic, you know, or she found in our attic and showed us the artifacts that she found. But the most interesting thing is the property, that little area. Back in the day, if you dig far enough back, and it took some digging, but if you look at the maps of where the Ringling Brothers, you know, or Barnaby Bailey or whatever it was called back in the day,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where their freak shows, their, you know, the what they called the freaks or the sideshows or whatever, all those people that lived in houses where that property lays, it was in the same places that these houses are now.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So you think about like how, you know, those people weren't socially accepted because, you know, some of these things were like a, you know, some kind of hereditary disease or a physical deformity, or, you know, we know how some of those freak shows were even fake.
Right.
At one time, you know, well, you know, they weren't socially accepted. So they probably died some horrible deaths. They weren't treated too well when they lived in them property and then that house and, you know, in those houses there. You know, when you look all of that up, yeah, there's a lot of bad juju on that land.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it goes way back. And I mean, that doesn't even include any of the Native American history that goes even further back. You know, this just goes back to when the circus started. You know, if I kept digging and we kept digging, I probably would have found a lot of Native American stuff that happened on that land up there, because all of that area close to the Dalles was all Native American land. It all was at one time, but I mean, all right. that whole area is rich in history. The northern part of Wisconsin's very rich in Native American history. You know, I still went, it still exists. It's more of a museum now than anything else. But up in the Wisconsin Dells, when I was a kid, there was actual Indian trading posts. Everything in those stores was made by the local tribes that were around. Okay. This was back in the 70s when Wisconsin Dells was more like Fort Dells. Okay. And you had the House of Xanadu and Storybook Gardens and all this other stuff. Well, there was a lot of Indian trading posts in the Dells at the time, in the 70s, in the early 80s. I went up there this summer. There's only one left. And it's actually one of the original Indian trading posts that were up in the Dells. And it's more of a museum now. Very cool place to visit.
Okay, I finally found the place I was talking about. It's called the Old Opry House. It's in Rossville. It's Rossville in Illinois, and it had many purposes over the years. Its original purpose was a Masonic lodge. It was planned in 1903.
Wow.
And by the Freemasons in the area, which ran it until 1947. So they ran it for about 44 years. The entire building, they owned the entire building. They had their lodge on the third floor. And again, what you just said about the building, third floor. There's a significance to the number three in Masonic, in the Masonics, something to do with three. If you remember, Mozart was a Mason, and Mozart in his last opera called the Magic Flute, which was the Zauberflüter, which that's how you say it in German, the Zauberflüter. Anytime you have an opera, there's an overture that comes before the opera begins. It's music. And if you listen to the overture of the Magic Flute, the Zauberflüter, you will notice that there's dun, dun, dun. It's threes, right? A little bit further. Dun, dun, dun. He was going back to his Masonic connections to do something. It was, I guess you would call it like a farce, a fantasy, about this person that owned this magic flute that could summon things.
And yeah.
So this thing on the third floor, that said the opera house was located on the first floor. It began operating in 1904. They had financial problems. They closed it in 1912. They did plays and so forth in 1912. They had some problems, but they reopened it. It ran until continued to 1929. But this guy in 2011, his name was David Triska, and he used to be the owner of the building. He's the one that died, unfortunately, and he made plans on making it an antique store. So people would, they could sell antiques. He would buy antiques, and it was loaded with antiques when we were there. And that's another thing, too. When you have antiques, they are trigger objects. They have associations with that own those that property.
Right. Yeah. Think about how much bad juju would be in that building.
Yeah. And there's a very old cemetery or graveyard, they say, the oldest in Vermilion County, not very far from this location. And many Native American Indians were buried right there. So Ooh. Think of all the connections you have here. There was all kind of, I can kind of show you on from my website, kind of. I don't know if you can see that really well. That's what the building kind of, let's see if I can get
that. Yeah, you're going to get the glow. That's all right. I'll look it up. I can kind of see it.
There's a pretty good picture there.
Yeah.
So that's what the building kind of looks like. It's called the Old Opera House in Rossville, Illinois. And we were there in 2013. And let me just These are some of the words that came through. Escaric. Escaric is a sprig of acacia that is used as an ancient symbol of rebirth. We had oracle. We had portal come through. Power, prey, spirit. And then we had this weird word that I did not understand. Figured out what it was until I looked up. It's called thurifer. You know what a thurifer is?
I have no idea.
A thurifer is used mostly in the Catholic religions. They will burn incense in there, and they will kind of
do this.
And then the incense, that's a thurifer. That came through at a Masonic lodge, and I've only had that show up one other time. I go, what the hell is a thurifer? I had this, look it up on my phone right away, and I go, wow, that's what a thurifer is. So, I mean, all those words that came through, for the most part, were we didn't ask a specific question, but we just got these words that came through. And all related to, I believe, there you go. All these things related to, a Masonic lodge. So I wanted to go back there. Absolutely wanted to go back there. And I was told that the owner, David, had died. And they were trying to figure out what to do with the building, who owned the building. Because when he was running the building, see if I can show you this picture here. If I can kind of, can you kind of see that?
Mm.
It says antiques, the haunted opera house, ghost hunts and paranormal research. That was on his window, and it had his phone number and everything. So people used to come there all the time and investigate. And I don't know how I discovered that, but it came to my attention. I said, yeah, we're definitely going to go down there. And we actually had several people from my group and a couple people from another group that went down there. And we were all upstairs when those words started coming through. And I'm going, like, one after another. I go, holy cow. And that's not the only time that happened. There was another a Masonic lodge in Oblong, Illinois. Which is, again, south of us, maybe a couple of hours or so.
There's a name for a town,
Oblong, yeah. And Mikey might be able to pull that up pretty quickly, but I don't remember offhand. But again, unfortunately, this wasn't the third floor. This was the second floor this time. Obviously, the building only had two floors, so there couldn't have been a third floor, but it was on the top floor again. So in all these buildings, the third floor is always a top floor. In this case, the second floor was the top floor. And I had a guy with us from another paranormal team that was a 32nd or 33rd or whatever the highest thing is, Mason. And these words start coming through, and he's going, wow, wow. And then as they're coming through, he's trying to explain them to me what the significance is. And I looked them up later. Obviously, he's 100% right. And I go, wow, we're even asking questions, and these words are coming through. So anytime I get a chance to do an investigation of a Masonic Lodge or what used to be Masonic Lodge, I'm going to be there, because there seems to be a lot of energy left over from the Masonic rituals that they were doing. Mikey knows, because he's a Mason now himself. I don't know what level he is, but he's going through that as well. And obviously, I can't ask them any questions about that, because Masons are sworn to secrecy, as you know. They're very secret rituals and so forth. The Oblong Oddfellows Lodge. So if you go to my website, it's the Oblong Oddfellows Lodge. And again, you will see and hear those words coming through the obelisk in dictionary mode that have a relationship to where we were at. And it's just crazy. And again, I would put the clickable link, and then I would put what we asked, if we asked anything, and then in parentheses, I would then say, this word is what this means, the significance. And it's just crazy how that all played right into the Masonic rituals that were there.
Yeah.
This is absolutely bizarre. I may not be able to go back to this Oddfellows Lodge in Oblong, but I've been trying to get into the other one, the one in Rossville.
You might try that bar that's here in Watertown.
Yeah. Is that all? That's a Mason thing too, right?
It's an Irish bar. It's called Lion's Pub or Lion's Inn or Lion's Den or something. I'd have to look it up. But it's in Watertown, Wisconsin, and on the third floor, if they haven't remodeled it yet or anything, you can obviously tell it was a Mason's Lodge and meeting place on that third floor.
Cool.
So, because their logo was painted on the floor. Really big. In the center.
Yeah, it's called the Lions Irish Pub.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's on Main Street. It seems everything's on Main Street.
Yeah. And then they've got all these old pictures of what it used to look like back in the 1800s or 1700s or whatever, whenever Watertown was founded.
Right, yeah.
Because that building's pretty old.
Quite a few of them are.
Yeah, I'll have to do a little research into that. I mean, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's where we were once. We went there once.
Like
a couple years ago. Probably like to go there again when I get some newer equipment. Because one, I want to get the REM pod, which I don't have. Wouldn't mind having the ABBA, you know. I gotta start searching now that I can see again, looking at the sites.
Well, again, you could do yourself a favor if you find something you think you'd like, send me the link, and I might be able to find it cheaper someplace else.
Cool.
Because I deal with so many of these places that make paranormal equipment, and they know me when I log on. And they're always trying to sell me stuff all the time. I'm always getting links saying, hey, we'll give you, just use this code and we'll give you like 20% off or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I could always.
I get things like that after a while. I know how that goes.
Yeah.
I've walked in this store. I deal with the same person for, you know, years at a time. And it's all of a sudden they're like, hey, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, some of these places, like for instance, Ghost Stop, I mean, they may have a lot of stuff on there, but the prices are kind of high.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And if you go to Jay Giuliano's site, which I believe is called the Ghost Hunting Store or the Ghost Hunters Store, I would keep getting the website mixed up. He's got reasonable prices on there, and he's always offering discounts, you know, and a lot of it's free shipping too, which also helps. So, you might want to check his site first and then make that as a comparison, because you'll find that his site probably is much cheaper than a lot of other sites. And it just saves you some extra money where you can maybe buy yourself another piece of equipment or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't always jump on the first place I go to, because I've known that for years that you, even when, like, say, if I got to remodel my house or I need windows or something, you know, my aunt used to just jump on the first person because it was a good Polish guy doing the work. Yeah, but you could have saved yourself thousands of dollars if you went and you searched for another. They're going to do the same thing. They're going to put the same windows in, but they just charge more. So it's the same thing with paranormal equipment. You just have to search around.
So this is the Ghost Hunter Store.
Yes.
The original one-stop paranormal and spiritual store.
Yeah, and you can go through there and you can click on any of those links for EVP.
I already just visiting the site, it's that enter your email for coupons and so on and so forth.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I might have to check this out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, tell them you know me. Drop my name. Tell me that Dale Kaczmarek sent you there, and he might give you a little bit of a more of a discount. I can't guarantee it, but my name carries a lot of weight. Because I order so much stuff. I got $17,000 worth of ghost hunting gear.
Oh, I'm not even close to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been doing this a long time. All right, Dale, it was nice talking to you, but I think I should end this show. We've almost done 2 hours here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was always a pleasure being on.
I'll stay talking because I'm waiting for Mark to come back anyways.
Sure.
So I got to end it, though. So here we go. We're going to end it here.